Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today, as always, is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Lichetti.
Howdy.
You guys having a good week?
A dark week.
A dark week.
I just remembered that Monday is a public holiday, so my week retroactively got much better.
Oh, I actually, thanks for the reminder. I had completely forgotten.
Seriously enough, it's Human Rights Day. And I'm not too sure if electricity is a human right, but yeah, I could really use some.
Well, I mean, isn't water a human right? And the city of Joburg just announced that there's going to be like rationing and shortages and everything. So
no, it really water is the apocalypse, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right.
You wonder Clinton. Why, considering all the coal is so wet. How did it get wet? Why are these dams being
filled? Can we take some of the water off of the coal and drink that?
Reverse osmosis, isn't
it? Yeah, aren't filters usually made of charcoal anyway? I'm sure that science checks out. We need a scientist on the show to confirm.
Right, Clinton, you got some good news for us if you're an Xbox Game Pass member on PC.
Yes, so after months, there was a massive delay. Microsoft said, hey, you know EA Play, that cool subscription service that EA does? We're just going to add it to Game Pass for free. You guys won't have to buy anything. It's just there. And about a month after that announcement, it arrived on console. And then Microsoft was like, guys, we hit a problem. You guys have to wait a while longer for PC. And we did wait quite a while. I think it's been like 3 months or something like that. It was the end of the year last year. Anyway, it's on PC now. Like right now, they announced it on the 17th. And then it was just there on the 18th. And if you have Game Pass on PC, you just load up the Xbox app and it's there. Now, there are some extra hoops, and I'm going to ask Brendan about it now because he actually did it. You do need to install the EA desktop app, which is somehow different to EA Origin. I didn't know that. And then you need to log into an EA account. If you don't have one, you need to make one, and then you need to link your Microsoft account to your EA account. Now, the good news is it's not that difficult, and there is a step-by-step process.
I'm going to stop you there because it's a lot more confusing than it's made out to be.
Okay.
So what you need to do is you need to so you'll open up your Game Pass app or the Xbox app on PC, and then you'll go to settings and then linked accounts, and then EA will be at the bottom, and it will there's a little phrase there. It doesn't say link. But that essentially takes you to an external website where you then log in, but you shouldn't log in with your EA account. What you need to do is you need to log in with your Xbox profile, and then it will prompt you if you've logged in. So essentially, you need to log into EA, then log out, then you need to log in again using your Xbox profile, and then the two are linked. It's really it's a little bit like tricky to get right. But I mean, I eventually managed to get it right in like 20 minutes. So yeah.
Okay. That's
it's the tenet of gaming platforms.
Yeah.
It's weird because I actually got EA Play on Steam because it was for a while, 80% off. So I thought, oh, you know, just before it goes off, I'll pick it up. And then the next week they announced that, that it was coming to Xbox Game Pass. So now I have doubled the subscription. Man, these subscription services, it's so frustrating. Anyway, you can go get it now. There's a lot of great games. And we also have a story about what games you should check out first. If you've just got this now and you're thinking, oh, there's so much stuff to play, we have a guide for that. So check that out. And it's not free. I know everyone says, oh, it's free. It's not free. It's included in your subscription. I'm sure Microsoft's accountants are like, oh, well, it's technically we paid for it. But for you, you just need this subscription. You can get right in there. There's a lot of good stuff there. So check out our story about it going live and check out our guide to what games you should check out first.
Robin, you have news about the Samsung Galaxy Note, or rather no news about the Samsung Galaxy Note.
Yeah, I rather class this as a smart decision from Samsung, and I'll explain a bit further on. So, as we know, Samsung like to have two flagship phone device launches each year. One is usually the Galaxy S, and the other is the Galaxy Note. You've already seen the Galaxy S, the S21 series that was launched earlier in the year, but it looks like we may not be seeing a Note series. So, During a shareholders meeting earlier this week, Samsung co-CEO DJ Ko kind of noted that, excuse the pun, he essentially said that there isn't really any kind of capacity for Samsung at the moment to release a Note in the second half of the year. He specifically said that the Note series is positioned as a high-end model in our business portfolio. It could be a burden to unveil two flagship models in a year, so it might be difficult to release Note model in 2H, that's second half of the year. The timing of Note model launch can be changed, but we seek to release a Note model next year. So to my mind, it looks like many of the constraints that Samsung and a lot of other smartphone makers have struggled with in 2020 have resulted in it trying to kind of refocus the strategy for 2021. That's probably why we saw the S21 series being released earlier than normal. And now it looks like the reason why the Note series is going to have probably skipped 2021 and we're going to see one next year instead. And to my mind, I think that's really a smart move, not just from the economics standpoint and as far as the supply chain goes and kind of the constraints that COVID-19 has brought around on that front, but rather the fact that a lot of these Samsung flagship phones at the moment feel very iterative. And I think probably, Brendan, you can talk to that as well. Just that there isn't really much difference between the 12-month window that you have between Note launches. So I think perhaps giving them another year to perhaps look for something a bit more innovative, because it's really, really difficult at the moment to kind of split the difference between last year's Note device and the S21 Ultra, for example.
So
I think this is a smarter move from Samsung, kind of try to focus maybe on something different for the next year's Note and then kind of see where it goes from there. Because I think the Note pretty much set the bar as far as phablets back in the day.
Yeah.
Really large smartphones. The S Pen was really innovative at the time. But it seems like they're running short of new ideas. So perhaps this gives them opportunity to draw up some new ideas and potentially wow people next year. So yeah, that's kind of what's happening on Samsung's front. So if you are holding out for a Note at the end of the year or later in the year, chances are slim at the moment.
I also wonder how much the Note series split their customer base, because I mean, especially now with the S series having a normal, a plus, and then an ultra version, and then the same going for the Note series. I do wonder how much that split their consumer base. And I mean, it's just three phones at a time is too much. I also think that the ultra versions of phones are pointless for most people. And yeah, I hope that they come back with a Note that's more business minded, because that's what the Note was always for. It was meant for like enterprise level executives, and it now just feels, like you said, Robin, an iterative adaptation of the S series. Clinton, you wanted to say something?
I wonder what's going to happen now with their folding phones, because if they're not even doing a Note, that bodes, you know, not very well for any kind of funkier stuff. If they're not even doing like one of their core phones this year, I don't think they're going to do one of their bonus super experimental phones. I don't know if their folding phones are even on the drawing board to be upgraded this year or next year. Again, the whole announcement that there's going to be no Note is very tentative right now. So, yeah, it's not looking good. I don't know if there's even a big segment of people saying, oh, I really want to get a new Fold. I already have one. I want to get a new one. I imagine that's a very, very small amount of people. But
yeah,
I don't think they're going to get one this year. It would be quite a surprise if they said no Note, but here's a folder.
Man,
I think like the one thing about COVID, though, is, or rather, I'm hoping that it will force a lot of these companies to kind of rethink their strategies. Over like the past decade, we've had a very quick turnovers in terms of the windows of new releases. And I feel like that's really hampered innovation in smartphones.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I don't see why. Okay, obviously, I know that from an economic standpoint, you have to have strong quarters all the time, and that means a lot of hardware has to be released every few months or so. But it feels like if you, for example, stretch out that window to 2, potentially even 3 years, it gives you a lot more space to be innovative, especially when it comes to the flagship end. For your mid-range entry-level stuff, I'm sure having new devices every 6 months or so makes sense. But for a flagship phone, that's a real big investment. So why not try to, I don't know, make it as appealing as possible to consumers? Because I can already tell right now what the what a 2021 model Note is going to feature, because I can just look at the S21.
Yeah.
And all I have to do is add an S Pen, and then we're good to go. So, yeah, I think some innovative features are definitely needed.
Well, I think the real reason is that there's a large market of people who just buy the new stuff because it's new, and the features are kind of secondary to that. And I think Samsung is quite aware of those people, and they try and cater to them because they're very easy to sell to.
Yeah. Right, moving on to something a bit more local. Load shedding is currently still in effect at stage 2. We are recording this at 10:30 on Friday morning. So if that changes between now and when this podcast is published, we're sorry. And there is a strong likelihood that it could change, because earlier this week, Eskom downgraded load shedding to stage 1. And then a few hours later in the same day, it shifted back to stage 2 load shedding because, as Eskom put it, in addition to Eskom's inability to supply the full demand, we have seen an increase in demand, which has put further strain on the emergency generation reserves today, Eskom wrote on Wednesday. What was really shocking, though, was on Thursday, Eskom apparently had enough capacity to suspend load shedding between 10 and 2 p.m. For the funeral of King Goodwill Zwelithini, the Zulu king who passed away last week. And I found that fascinating that they couldn't provide power effectively, but then was able to shift load shedding for a couple of hours for a memorial service. So
they found some capacity under a couch.
Well, I wish they would open. They would look under more couches then, because load shedding is expected to end at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. But whether that actually happens, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I very much doubt that, and I suspect that we're going to have more load shedding this weekend. To give you an idea of why I doubt that, 12,690 megawatts of capacity was unavailable due to breakdowns and delays on Wednesday, and 6,052 megawatts was unavailable due to planned maintenance. But there are numerous outages at numerous power stations. Things just aren't good. So maybe prepare this weekend by downloading some content to watch, or stocking up on candles, having a braai with social distancing. I don't know. It's such a mess. Yeah, what a segue. Because today we're talking about sort of the Snyder Cut of the Justice League, which in many parts of the world was released yesterday. Correct, Clinton? Yesterday, 18th of March.
Yesterday, yep, the 18th. It was around about, I don't know, 2-3 local time, but it didn't release 2-3 local time.
No.
Later.
In fact, if you're a South African like we are, you probably didn't know where to watch the Snyder Cut up until late yesterday afternoon, when Vodacom, through its video play service, tweeted out saying that the movie would be available for rental through video play. And
in a very strange way, there wasn't some big announcement saying, "Oh my god, guys, it's out later today." They were subtweeting somebody saying, "Please don't pirate the Snyder Cut, support, you know, the work that it went in."
Somebody who didn't even look like they were from South Africa, just by the way.
Someone on the video play team, I don't know, they must have been looking for a tweet like that, and then they're like, okay, sweet, we'll use this. And then it's very odd, let me just say. There wasn't a big announcement, it was just a by the by. And it was very strange, because a lot of South African websites and South African versions of international websites, they put out these pieces where they're like, oh, we have an inside source telling us that it's going to be here, here, and here.
Yeah.
But then the official account is just like, yeah, it's going to be out at 12, which I think was the point Brendan was getting to. It launched at midnight on the Vodacom Video Play platform.
Yeah. So
this is, we really want to talk about more the broader aspect of this. Not just the Snyder Cuts only being available yesterday at midnight. By the way, it's $40 on Video Play. You can register. You don't have to be a Vodacom subscriber. I registered with a Cell C number and it worked. So, yeah. If you want to watch the Snyder Cuts, 10 rand an hour. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's not bad, eh?
A movie ticket is usually like 100 rand when movie theaters were...
Yeah, a thing.
And those movies are only like maximum 2 hours. I mean, you're getting such a deal.
What a deal. But what I really want to talk about today is where South Africa kind of falls in the great content scheme of things. Because I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we get the short end of the stick time and time again. So the Snyder Cuts is just one example of this, or what's it called now? Zack Snyder's Justice League.
That's the official name.
So it's not just this. There were also rumors that I saw that it was going to be available on Google Play Movies. I can't find it there. You can find Justice League, but it doesn't seem to be the Zack Snyder edition.
The wrong Justice League.
The wrong one. But this goes a little bit further. Excuse me. So over the past couple of months, you may have seen a number of people on social media talking about a little show called WandaVision. We've been covering it as well, some of the stuff that happens in the show. But what really kind of irks me a little bit is that we can't access Disney Plus in South Africa easily. There is a way to do it. I'm not going to go into it because it's incredibly convoluted and you need to have a couple of things in place before you start signing up for it. But
I'm pretty sure it's also against their terms of service. So, I mean, if you Google it, stuff will come up, but South Africa is not supported officially at all.
Yeah. So there's a couple of problems with that in terms of licensing, all that sort of stuff. But it goes even further than that because it seems that the only time we get stuff at the same time as the rest of the world is when the powers that be decide to bring it to us. And in that case, the power that be is multi-choice. If you were a Game of Thrones fan, I still don't understand that show, but if you were a Game of Thrones fan, you were probably very happy that you could watch Game of Thrones on Showmax and DStv. However, the other side of that is that you would have to watch it later in the day and possibly have it spoiled for you online because, let's be frank, piracy is a thing. We don't condone it, but people do pirate things when they can't get access to them. Netflix has showed us that if people have easy access to content, they'll pay for it. But I kind of want to talk about today is, does South Africa get the short end of the stick when it comes to content distribution? My opinion is yes. Clinton, what is your opinion?
Oh, yeah, 100%. So something, I'll come back to the question now, but I just want to add that a lot of the people talking about WandaVision, if you're in South Africa, well, also in South Africa, because Twitter shows you, you know, local content. How are those people watching WandaVision? And I'm not asking you guys. I'm asking Disney. Disney, you've been releasing MCU movies day and date for a long time, for most of the 10 years that MCU was out. And I'm sure there's a whole licensing agreement with Disney South Africa and the theaters here in South Africa. And sometimes we even got the movies a few days early. Why don't we have this stuff? Guys, now I know why. We're going to get into it because of licensing stuff. But you've created a massive fan base in South Africa. Many Marvel movies are the top grossing movies. I think Black Panther is still the top grossing movie in South Africa of all time. That or Endgame. How can you cultivate this following and then give us no way to watch your movie? Now, I know actually in some countries, I think in Australia, they have like, I think it's called Disney Star, which is a different type of Disney Plus.
It's Malaysia. It's Malaysia and India.
Okay, so Australia also has a different version of it where they can watch WandaVision. Why didn't South Africa get any of those considerations? So I'm saying to Disney, how do you think people watch WandaVision in South Africa? They probably did it illegally, Disney. And now to get back to Brendan's question, do we get the short end of the stick? Yes. We don't have HBO Max. We don't have Disney Plus. I don't think we have Peacock, which is the new... another new streaming service, which allows you to watch the Office.
NBS, yeah. It's NBS's streaming platform.
Yeah, so...
Not unavailable in your region, I just checked. Peacock is not available.
We don't have any of that. Another thing was like Sony have their Play at Home initiative where they just give out free stuff. They gave out a 14-day free trial to Funimation, I think it is, Funimation's streaming service. We don't have that here either. We don't get a lot of stuff. Yes, we do get Netflix. And we get Netflix in local pricing. That's very nice. We have Showmax, which is basically just an online version of DSTV. But not really. That's a whole confusing thing. We also get Amazon Prime Video, even though you have to pay in dollars. We do get a lot of the good stuff, but we don't get all of it. And it's completely ridiculous that these companies expect us to wait. Even if you are a good, you know, an angelic person who follows all the laws and will never pirate or use a VPN or everything, you would have to go sit in a hole not to be spoiled by these things. It's just unreasonable. And even if we did get everything, I see a lot of Americans complaining, which is hilarious because they have access to everything. They're saying, even though I have all this access, I'm not going to pay for it all because it's ridiculous because I'll need to have 10 subscription services all charging me monthly, which is ridiculous. So
okay, we're going to get to that.
Yes, Robin, do you want to answer Brendan's question?
Yes.
Brendan's question, do you think we get the short end of the stick?
So my answer is kind of mixed. As far as asking the short end of the stick, I think the unfortunate thing is that a lot of these companies lump South Africa into Middle Eastern Africa, as far as the region goes. So, and the nature of things are that countries like South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, a lot of the countries that are bordering close to Europe, those countries, as far as access to digital services go, are far more advanced than other regions of the continent. And I feel like we have been unfairly lumped into a category. That said, from a business perspective, a lot of decisions are made because there needs to be a threshold as far as how many people will be able to access it. And I think sometimes we get perhaps caught in an echo chamber, for lack of a better term, as far as what we think should be available. The vast majority of South Africans don't have access to the internet, don't have access to these streaming services, and they end up being quite expensive, as we're going to allude to shortly when you start adding them up together. So I understand that perspective from the companies. So I think there is a delicate balancing act. Clinton made the point about us receiving Disney films, specifically the Marvel films, a week or so before other parts of the world. So there clearly is a market in South Africa, specifically when it comes to Disney Plus. As for HBO Max, for example, that's another issue with regards to licensing and Showmax. So I think there are already mechanisms in place that are limiting our ability to access these services. So I understand those elements, but what I don't understand is how they cannot be worked around. Because Showmax is not HBO. It has access to all its a lot of its content, but it is not HBO Max. It is not Time Warner. So again, like Brendan mentioned, there is a market here in South Africa. People are willing to pay. It might not necessarily be as big as parts of Europe or Australia or India, for example, which obviously has crazy penetration as far as mobile is concerned. It just feels like on one hand, we're being unfairly lumped into a category. And on the other hand, we may not be seeing the full picture as far as how many people can really access all this content.
Clinton?
I just want to add, I think, Robin, you kind of touched on it unknowingly, where we're getting stuck into a weird cycle of things where we don't have a very big market to, you know, act as grease for these negotiations to get the content. And because we don't get it, we can't grow a fan base or, you know, a culture of people buying this stuff. And because there's no culture like that, there's even lower numbers, which makes the contract negotiations more difficult. And then, it's a self-feeding mechanism. So that might be one of the big reasons why we have so many struggles, even though there might be a small dedicated market for it.
So something I do want to mention, and you touched on it briefly, Robin, but there are some limitations that I think we kind of either don't realize are in place or we forget about. So one of the things that I want to point to that's very important is that these organizations have to pay tax to SARS in South Africa, and registering for that, I can't imagine, is an easy process. And I'm pretty sure that you can't start selling a subscription until you registered for tax and all that sort of stuff in South Africa. So that's something that I think we need to consider. And that might be a reason why Disney Plus is taking so long to get here, or why maybe HBO Max doesn't really care about South Africa because it's too much effort. The other thing that's important to note is the Film and Publication Board. So only recently, and I mean like last month recently, did Netflix start displaying Film and Publication Board classifications on its content. So if you go to Netflix now, instead of just seeing the generic 16 plus or whatever the rating was beforehand, you'll now see an actual FPB badge that shows you what the show is rated at in terms of South Africa's rating system, rather. And that whole situation took nearly a year to complete. So essentially what happened is in 2020, the FPB announced that it had signed a distribution agreement with Netflix International. And only now has Netflix implemented the FPB classification stuff. And moving forward, I think that the FPB is very strict about how platforms such as Netflix are able to have their content classified in South Africa. We saw this many years ago with the FPB draft regulations. And there was a lot in there for platforms such as Netflix, the likes of YouTube, even Google through Google Play Movies, that sort of stuff. So those are two things that I just want to make note of as something that might be being a roadblock for getting these services here. With that having been said, however, for a service like Disney Plus, and I know I'm harping on about Disney Plus, but it is arguably one of the fastest growing platforms at the moment. They have a breadth of content that I think everybody would love to access. And the fact that Disney has a presence in South Africa, but Disney Plus, we just have no word on it, no communication about what's happening. Is it coming to South Africa at all? It seems out of touch, right? But like I said, there's still this presence in South Africa. So what's happening? Why is there this silence from these things or from these entities? But like, as Robin said, he did mention that we do get some stuff, and I wonder if that's not a benefit of being in South Africa. For instance, in South Africa, you can watch The Office on Netflix, which you can't do in the US because it now belongs to Peacock, and you have to watch it on Peacock. You can watch Friends on Netflix in South Africa, which you can't watch in the US. So maybe there is a benefit. Do you guys think that there is maybe a benefit to being in South Africa and not having to apply by all of these different streaming services rules? Let's start with you, Clinton.
Sorry, I kind of jumped the line there. So yes, I do think, you know, being a smaller market, we sometimes get overlooked, and then that's to our benefit. Because the whole reason that The Office and Friends and some other popular things were taken off Netflix is because the owners overseas looked at the Netflix numbers and they thought, hey, if we put this on our service, we could make more money. But then they looked at our market and they thought, you know, it's doing fine as is, let's just leave it. Either that happened or Netflix fought for our markets harder than the big US market, which I highly doubt. I'll go with the former. So yes, the benefit of being overlooked is that you can get away, not with murder, but you can get away with some things. And that's not just in, you know, streaming services and content. South Africans can get away with a lot of other international things. Like, again, sometimes if you use a VPN to get onto these services, the streaming services know that this is happening, but they just let people go about their business because at least they're making some money, right? Yeah, instead of, you know, a little bit of something is better than a whole lot of nothing. Yeah. So So yes, there is some benefit, like Brendan said, and also sometimes we get favorable regional pricing. I haven't checked Netflix in a while. I don't know if our local pricing is better than the American pricing after conversion. It might be very close to the same the last time I looked. So yeah, there's some benefit. I'm going to pass it to Robin. What do you think about that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to have some of the fans again here. So as far as us benefiting, I think there are, it really kind of depends on the platform. If you take something like Netflix, for example, it has done a great job over the past few years as far as getting access to as much content as possible that other parts of the world do. If I take another platform, say like Crunchyroll, which specializes in anime, a friend of mine is able to use his VPN to access content that he couldn't get in South Africa. And I feel like that's a bit of a shortcoming. So I think it's very much a platform-by-platform basis. I think we also benefit from something like Showmax, which is, relatively speaking, not that expensive. And it gives access to a lot of HBO content and some other kind of original stuff that MultiChoice also does. So there are some, I guess, some avenues there we do benefit. But in general, I think that there's still a lot of geolocated hurdles that we have to cover. And I just wanted to mention as well, as far as roadblocks, I do wonder if, for example, the TV licensing and Netflix debacle earlier this year has now kind of just made a lot of companies a bit more hesitant to approach South Africa, because that if that kind of goes through, that's going to be a lot. That's going to cause a lot of resentment among South African consumers. And although it is meant to be directed at government as far as how it's handling these issues, it could result in people choosing to simply go the VPN route or find some kind of other illegal pirating elements in order to access content, as opposed to paying for it if it isn't made available here.
Oh, yeah. I think... So, do you guys want to get into the whole piracy
stuff? Not just yet. I do want... Before we do that, we will get to it, though. What I do want to talk about is moving on to cost, because that will lead into piracy. So, I just did a bit of napkin math here very quickly, and for all the streaming services that I subscribe to, I pay on average 427 Rand a month. That's not including Spotify and some other sundry stuff that I have. This is just video content. It's 427 Rand. So, Brendan, why do you pay so much for streaming services? So, the reason, and I want to point this out, if you go to Netflix and you type in Jurassic Park, right, you can watch Jurassic Park 1, the original movie, Jurassic Park 3 and Jurassic Park World, as well as the new animated Camp Cretaceous, I believe it's called. But if you want to watch Jurassic Park The Lost World, which is the second movie, the only place that I have been able to find that movie to stream in South Africa is through Showmax, which ironically has Jurassic Park, Jurassic Park 2 The Lost World, Jurassic Park 3, and Jurassic World. So it has all four of them, but Netflix only has three of them. And this kind of means that if you wanted to watch a whole series of movies, a whole set of movies, I guess, a box set, you would have to basically subscribe to two different services. So this is where I'm starting to become a little bit hesitant about streaming services. And if Disney Plus were to launch tomorrow, I would very much hesitate to purchase a subscription every month. I might subscribe for the first month, see how things go, and then cancel. But the reason I'm bringing this up is that I think we are approaching a point where we are basically spending as much as you would on something like DSTV for a streaming service. And while everybody says, oh, but it's still cheaper, I just want to point out that you need to have a pretty beefy internet connection in order to stream. And nowadays, I think the cheapest one you can get is a 10 megabit per second line, which is like 400 to 600 Rand, right about there.
Yeah.
And that's a cost that you have to factor in, right? So while DStv charges a lot of money, it's a one-and-done sort of deal, right? You pay your subscription, you get access to the content as well as all the advertising that comes along with it every month. So with streaming services, it's very much the same. But the other side of this is that Netflix can just decide tomorrow that it doesn't want to be in South Africa anymore, right? It's another side to it. But I'm losing my point here a little bit. Do you think that we have reached a point where there are too many streaming services now and they are charging too much money? Robin, let's start with you.
So I do believe that there are too many streaming services. Whether or not they're charging too much money, again, we live in a capitalist society. They are offering a service, they're offering it at a price, and if people are willing to pay that price, it will continue to stay as high as it is. So again, if people want to kind of voice their opinion or voice their displeasure, you do it with your wallet. And unfortunately, I think we're going to segue into it later, but I think you also do it via pirating to kind of showcase that you don't have to want to pay that much.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. There are way too many services. There's like a new one popping up every other week.
Yeah.
It gets very difficult to track. Something like I remember I wanted to watch Tombstone, which is a great Western about Wyatt Earp.
Yes.
Val Kilmer gives an amazing performance as Doc Holliday. You should watch it. This is my little recommendation. I could not access it on any platform in South Africa. I tried VPNs. I couldn't get it. I could, however, buy it from Apple TV Plus at $100.
What?
For perpetuity. So it might sound a bit like an exaggeration, but it's almost like they're forcing your hand as far as pirating goes. I know that's a real big leap, but when you have so many different platforms and still you can't access content, what other recourse do you have?
I mean, I tend to agree with you.
We're not talking about life and death stuff here, but
yeah,
it's like we have all these services and actually you're not necessarily getting the content that you want.
I mean, just to give you an idea, Robin, like I wanted to watch Endgame during the December break, and the only place I could stream it was through Google Play Movies, and I had to pay, I think it was like $40 or something in order to watch it, and then you only have 30 days, but once you start watching it, you have 48 hours to watch it, and then the rental goes away. And I kind of just sat there going, okay, I'm going to pay this because I want to watch the movie and I want to do it legally. I don't want to pirate it. But then a couple of months later, you're sitting there going, man, I really want to watch that final fight scene again because it's really, really great. I don't know. It just feels to me like there's this conspiracy to keep us all buying things continuously until we can't. No, that's I'm being silly now. But I do think that there's got to be a better way. Clinton, what's your opinion? Do you think that there are too many streaming services and are they charging too much?
Yeah, so yeah, the problem is the apologists and the streaming services always say the same thing. We offer a cheaper subscription service compared to buying or renting the individual things themselves. And both of you touched on the same thing with that Western and Endgame.
Yeah.
It would be cheaper if they were available on streaming platforms to just buy a month of the streaming platform, you know, watch it as much as you want in that month and then go on with your life compared to just owning it in perpetuity or renting it for 2 days. But that's what they want you to do because they want you to do one of two things after you've consumed that specific content. They want you to preferably forget that you've subscribed and just stay paying for an indeterminate amount of time.
Mm.
Or they want you to discover something else on the service, watch that, and then when the end of the month comes around, say, you know what, I still want to watch a few more things, I'll just subscribe for another month. And then hopefully, again, self-feeding snake, you'll just stay on forever. So the individual subscription services, their fees are actually really agreeable, the individual prices. But the problems come with the fact that you now have to subscribe to so many of them. You might forget to unsubscribe. So, yeah, it's one of those death by a thousand cuts kind of things where you can stomach subscribing to one or two or three or however many.
Mm.
But then when the resubscription comes around, because they always have it automatic. It's so – I don't think I've subscribed to anything in the last few years where there's an option to just be subscribed for 1 month. The absolute gold model now is automatic – renewals, and the only way to get around that is just to cancel your subscription. Mm-hmm. There's no more buying 1 month and saying, okay, you know, the website will cancel it for me after 1 month. They don't want you to do that. They want you to forget and subscribe for another month, which I've been tricked into a few times. You know, you can put alarms and you can try and remind yourself so many times, but one is always going to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, to answer your question, Brendan, there are too many, but because they're priced so cheap individually, you sometimes forget, or a lot of people are just so apathetic that they're like, oh, it's only, you know, it's only 100 rand, it's only, you know, 40 rand.
I've been guilty of that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, life is hard, everyone's busy all the time, you know, adults, and kids have a lot of the freeloaders. We're doing so much every day that, again, it's what's it called, it's decision fatigue, right?
Mm.
When, you know, you've had a hard day at work, you woke up at 7 or whatever, it's 6 o'clock and now you're watching your movie, and then Netflix or whatever says, listen, you're up for renewal. Do you want to just let it ride, or do you want to go through multiple hoops to unsubscribe? And at that point, you're just so apathetic that you say, you know, let it ride for another month. I'll probably cancel it next month. And then they got you. They got you so good, because that was their plan all along.
Yeah.
So, yeah, life is hard, man. Anything that can make it easier, and automatic renewals make it easier, you kind of just let it go a lot of the time. And I think they're banking on that.
I just want to eat some humble pie very quickly. Eskom has just announced that load shedding will be cancelled from 12 o'clock on Friday because generation units have returned to service. So good news, everybody. No load shedding over the long weekend, at least until that changes.
Yeah, don't serve up that pie. Just
touch wood. Anyway, back to the discussion. We've spoken about that, but let's talk about piracy, because I think that is an important discussion to have. And while we don't condone piracy, I understand why people do it, right? It's because you can't get access to the thing that you want easily or at an affordable price, such as Robin's example about Tombstone. I highly recommend you watch that movie. It's a really, really good movie. But, I mean, to pay 100 rand because you just have this fee, I just want to watch it once, yeah, it seems extreme to me. Especially when you look at things like DVD rental stores, which we had a discussion in our Slack channel about a couple of weeks ago, how the video stores all but disappear. There's one or two scattered around Johannesburg, but for the most part, they're gone. And sure, you can rent through Google Play Movies, but that's not true for everything. Especially older movies, you likely have to buy them. You can't really rent them, such as Tombstone. I mean, that goes for a couple of older movies that I've seen as well. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one that comes to my mind, actually. But I understand why people pirate. It's why services like Netflix became so popular in the first place, because there was a viable alternative to pirating, and you didn't have to go through the hoops of downloading, the risk of getting a cease and desist from Universal or Sony or Disney or whoever it was. You could literally just open a website, click play, and there it is. Convenience was what stopped people from pirating. Well, not stopped, but pushed people away from piracy and towards subscription services. I feel like we've gone too far the other way now. We've mentioned it that there are so many, like Clinton said, death by a thousand cuts. You have this service, this service, this service, this service, all asking for a subscription, which initially sounds pretty good. Like, oh, your first month is free, and that's the worst thing. I never sign up for those things. Is 1 month free, and thereafter it's X amount of rand per month. And that's where you kind of forget about your subscription, because it's 1 month, you forget about it, you usually sign up like in the middle of the month, and then in the middle of the month it's, oh, where did 99 Rand go? What was that? Oh, it was that subscription I forgot about. And I do feel that we've maybe gone too far to the other side. So I'm not asking you guys if you condone piracy. I mean, everybody has their own opinion about it. I mean, I've downloaded a few images off of Google Image Search myself in my day and used them as a background image, which you're not supposed to do, but I've done that. And I kind of understand why people pirate. Do we think that we are now experiencing, maybe in the next few years, we're going to see a surge in piracy once again? Clinton, let's start with you.
So what's the old saying that good old Gabe said? Piracy is almost never a monetary problem. It's a service problem. So I think I butchered it a bit, but the sentiment stays. People pirate most of the time, not because of the monetary concerns, but because it's easier. Because if you take, you know, your whatever your preferred pirating method is, if you look at that, that has all the content already, right?
Yeah.
It has everything you would ever want. But Netflix doesn't have any everything you want anymore. Showmax doesn't have everything you want. Da-da-da-da-da. If this weird, you know, deluge or transmission or whatever you're using, if that has everything, why downgrade? Why kneecap yourself? Now, people can say ethical concerns, you know, stuff like that, legal concerns as well. But the pirates, again, offer a better service, and people will usually go for the better service. You can't begrudge someone for wanting the best, because isn't that the entire basis of capitalism? The best product will be decided by the free market, and that product will make the most money. It's the basis of capitalism, right? So when the free option is the cheapest and the best, how can you argue against that? And then, you know, the people will say, oh, it's the law. Can you say, you know, I don't really give a damn, because these are billion-dollar companies who aren't going to, you know, it's not like you're going and robbing someone, and it's not like you're stealing a loaf of bread from the mom-and-pop store who need that money to keep the lights on. People get, you know, people are apathetic about keeping their subscription goings. People have been so hard done by everything in the world that, quote unquote, you know, big air quote, stealing from a big movie company is so low in their list of concerns that they don't even think about it anymore. And I think especially the younger generations coming up now, where pirating is just part of life. You know, you go to school and your friend's like, oh, I watched this last night, or I downloaded this. And they just got it for free because they pirated it, because it's part of culture now. And the companies are probably very angry with how I'm talking about all of this, but it's the truth. You know, call a stick a stick. That's how the world is right now. And it's so disingenuous, and the companies are like, oh, you know, you're taking jobs from filmmakers, and it's not just the billion-dollar directors. It's the key grips who are paid minimum wage and need this work. I agree. I mean, when theaters were a thing that existed, I was paying the massive premium. I was seeing a movie every week. You know, a lot of people think I just go, or, you know, journalists just go to like paid for previews and everything where you don't need to buy a ticket. But I was going with my salary, going to see a movie every week. I was supporting this industry because it's an industry I love. And I understand if I wasn't paying to see those movies, more movies like that weren't going to be paid. I was seeing midnight previews. I was paying for the popcorn to support the movie theater. I was doing everything I can. And then I get slapped in the face by saying, you're not going to get this movie. You're not going to get the show.
Yeah.
You're really letting down your core market. So, yeah, I'm starting to babble. Robin, what's your take on piracy? It's a very hot topic.
Yeah, so I think we can probably all agree that piracy in general is bad. But that having been said, if I have signed up for 6, 7, 8 different streaming services and I still can't access the content that I'd like to and that people have made available to the world, I have no other recourse, really.
Yeah.
I understand if I was signed up to 1 or 2 and it's a case of you don't have access content with for example, like Disney Plus and HBO Max, which aren't available in the country. But outside of those two services, I'm signed up to like 7 different streaming platforms, and I still can't access the content that should be available via those platforms because I'm in South Africa and I'm struggling with licensing and geolocation.
Mm.
So yeah, like Clinton said, I think we all want to support these services. We all want to do things legally, but because of licensing, because of money grabbing, because of wanting exclusivity, you're not able to access the content you want to. So if that happens, and I'm already paying it, and I'm paying what, maybe 2,000 rand a month, and I factor in my fiber line as well, I'm going to have to go for something better, something that's cheaper and that I know will work and it will get me the content I want. So again, yeah, piracy we know is not great for the industry. But at the same time, a lot of these services are hamstringing us as far as access to content goes.
Here's something else I just want to mention, right, is that I'm not telling you how to do piracy here, but one of the main pieces of advice given to people who are pirating is to make use of a virtual private network service, a VPN, so that you obfuscate your IP address and it's harder to track where you are, harder for people to have a legal team come knocking on your door. And I just want to point out that for NordVPN, there are many VPN services, but I think many of them follow this model. You need to pay for a year-long subscription or however long your subscription is upfront, right? You can pay for a month at a time, but it usually ends up costing you more than if you opt for a year or two-year plan.
You know, even 3 years, they really – I bought a three-year special
yeah.
a while back.
And they charge you it all at once. Now, to Netflix, Disney, Amazon, CBS, NBS, HBO, to all of them, if people are willing to drop, and at the moment, a two-year plan through NordVPN costs $89. If they are willing to drop $89 all in one go just to be able to access your content somewhere else, you're done goofed. You've made a mistake somewhere because, I mean, sure, some people might be using that VPN for other things, but I reckon that given the push of advertising that we've seen on places like YouTube in recent years, a lot of those VPN users might be using it for accessing content in another region, but yeah, a lot of them might be using it for... Brendan, yeah?
I just want to say, NordVPN and all the other VPN services aren't saying buy our stuff to pirate. The advertising stick that they usually say is use our software to access geo-locked stuff, but you're still paying. So yeah. They're saying, if you're in America, buy our VPN, and then you can access UK Netflix, and you can watch The Office. They are not condoning piracy.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Several times, they're like, yeah, we don't.
And thank you for clearing that up.
Frame it as far
yeah,
as
I don't want to get a cease and desist from Nord saying yeah. we don't support piracy.
Sorry, Robin, you wanted to say something?
I was just going to say that a lot of the times these VPNs frame their services as being a great privacy tool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not that these services are condoning privacy. It's more like if you have a toothbrush, you can also use it to clean windows or silverware, you know? Like, it doesn't have to just be used for teeth.
And stab a man, but that's not what the toothbrush manufacturers are going to tell you.
Exactly. They tell you to use it to brush your teeth, and, oh, it's so great at brushing your teeth, but it can have other uses, and that's what I'm trying to get across here with a VPN, is that if folks are spending this amount of money to circumvent your protections, you've messed up somewhere. And maybe it's time to go back to the drawing board and think about how these services are offered. And I hear the arguments about licensing in different countries and having to pay tax and adhere to regulations in certain countries. But if you're not going to go through that effort, then I'm sorry, but you don't get to complain when people are taking your stuff somewhere else. Like, I know that's a very simplified argument, and it is flawed, but it's the principle of the matter. And I know lawyers will be cringing at that sentence, but it's the principle of the matter that if you aren't going to give it to me in a way that I can get it easily and affordably, I'm going to go somewhere else. And if I have to pay more money once off in order to get unlimited content, I'm going to do that. And yeah, it really does feel like Netflix had this idea and they were like, we're going to be this hub for content. And then everybody else saw what Netflix is doing and going, we could do the same thing. And we could do it with our content, which will bring people here because people love watching it on Netflix. They'll love watching it on Peacock. Not necessarily. I don't know how Peacock is doing, but I can't imagine that it's doing very well given how split the streaming world is at the moment.
Terrible name, by the way.
Yeah, it's a horrible name. I don't know. HBO Max, that one, I still don't think that's the best name. It's a really weird name because they had HBO Online for a while. And so do we think that streaming services are going to get better, or do we think that they are, or the situation is just going to get worse? Robin, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, in the fact that we've seen a whole bunch of streaming services pop up trying to rival the likes of Netflix. Disney Plus looks to be the real contender on that front. HBO Max is a contender. I don't think as much as Disney Plus. We'll have to wait and see. But I think what will happen is we'll have a whole bunch of different services over the coming few years, and the less popular ones will fall away. And that's when I think they'll start to cotton on to the fact that perhaps we shouldn't have done that, and we should just make our content available via the larger platforms and let them kind of duke it out like that. And we'll just take a little cut of the licensing.
Yeah, I think I tend to think that that's where things are going as well. Or in the next few years, we'll have a startup coming up with a way to unify all of these streaming services. And then we just have cable again, or what's called satellite TV in South Africa, or cable in the US, but like a mix of channels where you can just choose what you want to watch and they all aggregate.
Well, I mean, multi-choice already bundle in Netflix. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, yeah, we are seeing that locally. I think you can get Netflix, Apple TV, and Amazon Prime through Vodacom, so you can essentially use your Vodacom airtime to pay for these subscription services. So that's really cool. Whether we see that happening in the future, though, I'm not 100% sure, because, or whether we see something that where it's literally a platform where you can watch Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus, etc., for one fee a month. I don't know. Maybe that's wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more money grabbing before clearer minds
prevail.
Yeah.
So I think the answer to our question is, our original question is, why do we get the short end of the stick? I think it's a number of factors, and I don't think that it's going to get better anytime soon. As I mentioned, like Disney Plus, I check every single day, but I really feel that until we hear more, I'm just going to stop doing that because I waste my time and I get disappointed every single time, because all I want to do is watch the MCU from beginning to end again. That's all I want to do. I mean, I would have loved to do it this long weekend.
I just want to watch Tombstone, man. That's all.
Yeah. It's so difficult, though, because like I want to support these people, and I know that the people that work on these things are really, really passionate about what they do, and they deserve to be paid for it. But then when the marketing department or the higher-ups take control, it's kind of like, let's release this to five people. And I think that's where we're kind of falling short. As Clinton mentioned, Gabe Newell from Valve once said that if you have a piracy problem, it's more often than not a service problem and not a monetary one. And I think that right now we're in an age where the service of streaming is, it's a questionable one, man. I don't know where we're going with this, but something has to get better. And I think that's going to wrap it up from us for this week. We seem to have lost Clinton Matos. I think his internet may have
fallen over.
Yeah, they must have cut off his VPN service. They heard him talking about piracy and were like, that's another thing. We do want to just say that piracy is bad. You are going to probably come up short against the long arm of the law in the long run. So don't pirate. Like I said, I understand why people do, but maybe don't do it. These people, there are people that work really, really hard on these projects, and they deserve to be paid and get the recognition that they deserve. And when you pirate something and you don't watch it on these streaming platforms, then the streaming platform sees, nobody's watching this, let's cancel it. And that's how you lose the Santa Clarita diet, and I think we all don't want that to happen again. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio. From Robin Chetty.
Take care, everyone.
And from Clinton Matos, I used to launch you. Goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.